Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Steiner on a way to talk to Baynard Woods. I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. And it's time for our City Paper Look, and we're going to focus here on the lead story here in the City Paper, written by Bennett Woods, who is their editor-at-large and writer for The Guardian, about the sinkholes and infrastructure of Baltimore. Baynard, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, great to be here.
How you doing, man?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm good.
I'll tell you, I hate the FCC. I've always hated the FCC since my pirate radio days, and I really wish you could have said, we're here talking beep with Baynard Woods.
Well, if we had taped this, we could do the beeps.
Right. So thanks, FCC. Okay.
The article is called Sinkhole, What is Happening Beneath the Ground Downtown. And what Baynard's alluding to, this is a really very thoroughly investigated but creatively written piece. Can we say that?
Sure.
Which is, it's refreshing to see somebody write in this very personal style about a really good piece of investigative journalism.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like that people feel like if they're writing, I mean, a lot of people have written most of the same factual stuff that's in this. I uncovered a couple things, but I think that they feel that in order for it to be serious, or their editors feel that it has to be, like, written in the most dreadfully boring way possible, so that you can't ever make a joke or I think that there's a lot of room for humor in nonfiction writing. And the people who have lived, I've lived on the sinkhole on Center Street for the last 6 months, and so gallows humor is sort of the only way to deal with some of these infrastructure issues.
So let's talk about what really is going on in Baltimore, because, I mean, you allude to things happening around Freddie Gray and the infrastructure of the city literally falling apart in poor working class neighborhoods across the city of Baltimore, and the man who was killed sitting in his vintage Cadillac by a house that fell down, as emblematic of what's happening here. But the reality is that we are seeing a city that's literally sinking into the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing because and I think it will spread out increasingly over the coming years, because the downtown sewer lines were laid before most of the other ones. And so they weren't laid until after the 1904 fire. We were one of the last major cities to have a sewage system. Before that, there were private cisterns that were emptied out, and it would go directly into the Jones Falls and ultimately into the harbor. And people coming from other places would complain. And so it took the 1904 fire to get it started. And the mayor, McLean, who started the process, actually committed suicide shortly after starting the process for having the sewers, and which the system, which was opened finally about 1911 when they opened Back River. And so it really was... you know, it's really more than 100 years that these pipes have been under there, and many of them not monitored or repaired, you know, doing sort of preventative maintenance over the years. And so, you know, we just blew through the date to the consent decree date that we had from the 1998, the consent decree to stop backflow and overflow into the streams and rivers. And one of the reasons they say they haven't been able to do that is because they just had no idea what was going on under there. And it took a lot of this time to sort of figure out, because as pieces get hooked on over the years, they don't get added to the plans. And so you really don't even know what's going on under there.
I mean, there's so many pieces to this. I mean, one of the things that was interesting to me, let me take it back to the historical piece for a minute before we go back to where we are right now, that when the city began, it just shows how this happens in almost every issue the city or the nation faces. That at the beginning, when they wanted to build the sewer system in Baltimore in the early part of the 20th century, when this began, the people who actually took the sludge, the crap, the stench, the polluting elements that they would cart into the bay and the rivers, that they opposed the sewer system because they were worried about losing their jobs, right?
Yeah, because that was their industry disappeared when we got a sewer system, totally.
Right. So, I mean, and things change like that. But I think that and you go through a great history about what happened in Fairfield, in a black community where things were just, sewage was just dumped, and what happened to that community. But where does that leave us now? I mean, we interviewed the Blue Water people recently on this program, who are part of the consent decree now. But, I mean, the city literally, it seems to me, is sinking into the ground but doesn't have the money to get this done, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, that seems right to me. I mean, I don't know what – fortunately, I didn't have to look too much at solutions. I mean, I think they've spent so much money already, and it really is impressive what's happening over at Back River, because one of the big problems of the overflows is that that was just designed poorly in the first place, and there's a lip coming up. Basically, where all the sewage comes in to the treatment plant, there's a lip that causes it to back up if there's a lot of water, and then that causes the outflow, which was a design in the system. And so they've closed most of them, all but two, and so they're trying to fix that. But, yeah, where I mean, it's sort of amazing to think that they were able to lay this sewage system in the first place. That we were now we seem, like you said, in our country as a whole, like we're incapable of doing anything of the magnitude, like creating a new sewage system. Of course, at the time, all you had was empty streets that, you know, when you dug them up, there was nothing but dirt beneath them. Now we have fiber optics, gas lines, all of these other things going on. So it's extremely complicated and on an engineering level and stuff like that. And part of what happened was I was so frustrated with this sinkhole and then became sort of just fascinated by it and astounded that we have all of this stuff under the ground at all, and that I can go sit on my toilet and then flush it and never see it again. It's something I think we tend to take for granted, but it's right. Rather amazing.
So, I mean, but part of what this is, I mean, in looking at the article you read, and I read it late last night, was that we now, because of what's happening, an astounding thing here, we had this agreement made by Martin O'Malley that you write about, that he signed. The city would eliminate all the sewage spills and overflows by the beginning of the year. Blew through that deadline, as you write. And we dump, like I said last year, 42 million gallons of raw sewage into our city's rivers and the harbor.
Yeah.
42 million gallons of literal crap.
Yeah. Or crap mixed with water and whatever we flush it with. But yeah.
Right. Antibiotics, whatever's in there, going into the...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, astounding amounts. And you know, one of the things that they said, that DPW said when I asked them about that, is that until they fix that big problem at Back River, that the only other possibility, the reason they have that happen is the only other possibility is that comes up through people's basements. And, you know, there have been thousands and thousands of cases over the last years of that happening, of it also coming up and flooding people's basements with sewage. The one woman was blown off of her toilet by sewage. It's fascinating because we weren't able to get a sewage system in the first place because of a lack of leadership and a lack of municipal ability on the part of the city. And it'll be fascinating to see if we have any real ability now as a city to move forward and actually fix this problem, or do what we seem to be doing with all of our other problems, just sort of do it enough and that people will talk about whatever other problem is bigger and forget about this one for a while until their basement's the one that's flooded.
So I wonder where you think this is going to take us. I mean, you live in the middle of it. Where the two of you live, you said they have this 24-hour working on this on the sinkhole on Center Street that wakes you up at all hours of the night and day. So, I mean, you also wrote from that perspective, the perspective of living in the middle of it.
Yeah, I mean, if I walked over towards my window right now, they're actually paving the Center Street one right now, but they're also using some kind of saws to cut through stone, it seems, right now. So if I were even to go near the window, the listeners could hear the joys. And, you know, where it's going to go, I think it's going to just move through. It's going to be another one, and then another one, and then another one. And I think that's sort of inevitable in terms of the age of these pipes, the amount of waste we have coming through them. I don't see there being any fix. That they're not going to be able to do it proactively as they would like, I think, because there will be more one catastrophe after another. I sort of fear about that we were really lucky. The one guy who got sucked into the hole over at Mulberry Street was, when that happened, was when I really had a great deal more sympathy for the people working on this. I mean, but that could have been a car. That could have been any number of things that fall into this collapse. And so I'm hugely pessimistic in general, hugely pessimistic that we have the will or ability to fix most things. But in this case, I think it's virtually inevitable that things will, that the sewage lines and water mains will continue to break and wreak havoc throughout the city for as far as I can see.
And the tragedy of the woman who was killed, who died because it fell into that hole, was that she was part of the DOJ report. She was a woman who had been on the street, been a sex worker and an addict, and had gotten her life together and was really working to change her life and the world around her. And she fell into this hole and literally burned to death. She died in that hole.
Yeah, and I mean, that was even just a regular manhole. It wasn't the sinkhole. It was right by the sinkhole.
Right.
And so, yeah, there's some things I wasn't able to get into it too much, but there's some things about that that doesn't make sense yet that I'm still waiting to see what the police investigation comes out with, because they say that she pushed one of those big, you know, orange and white, I call it a bong, looks like a bong, with the smoke stuff coming out of the top, that she pushed one of those things out of the way and then fell in. But she seemingly was a small woman, and
yeah, yes,
that's a huge, heavy thing. So, yeah, I but that was, yeah, what a tragic thing to have happen.
So, but you mentioned only briefly in the article, though, that Boston fixed the problem in at the Charles River, because they, as you wrote, they made the environment and public health, safe health, a priority. Atlanta made its vast improvements as a result of the decree they had in 1998. Did they do something different than we did? Do you know?
I don't know too much how they were able to move. I mean, I think part of it, I don't know about Boston as much. I mean, I do know that Boston put a lot more money into trying to clean the river, and it became a big civic issue and a civic pride issue and stuff. And Atlanta, I think they weren't dealing with quite as old, and the infrastructure didn't have quite the same kind of problems, but they had different problems with being at a headwater. So rather than being at the end of the sort of at the bay like we are, or in the harbor, they're at the top of a river, and so it polluted everyone downstream. And so I think there was a little bit more force from other municipalities that also kicked in sort of on Atlanta. So I'm not an expert on either of those cities, but they both – and Atlanta had two consent decrees, and they met one, it seems, and the other one they didn't. So because like with us, there's a state and a – one for violating state law and one for violating federal law.
Right. And I just want to say, I think, and before we have to run out of here, I mean, your approach to this, I think the way you wrote this is really in a very personal, popular way, as well as looking into the facts. I mean, I love the style that you put into this.
Well, thanks. I really mean that.
I didn't know you were going to do that when I started reading the article, and I realized, oh wow, this is written as a gigantic creative piece that talks about the, literally using the word we can use in here, the poop that fills our world that's flowing into everything, but how it's affects our lives. I mean, you just really took a very personal view of this, and I thought it was really an amazing piece you did.
Nothing's more personal than poop, Mark.
And on that note, Bannon Woods is the writer for The Guardian and the City Paper editor at large, who wrote the lead article on this week's City Paper. Really, I would really encourage you all to get the City Paper this week and just pick it up. It's called Sinkhole, What's Happening Beneath the Ground Downtown. Really, it was really well-written, creative, thoroughly investigative piece. So, Bannard, poop on and thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Good to have you with us, brother. Thank you so much. and thank you all for being part of the show today, and I hope you enjoyed what we brought your way. On our way out of here, I'll remind you that Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Get more information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org. It's MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. It's all right there. And I want to thank you all for joining and being part of the show today and being, I hope you, please do let us know what you thought about today's program, the interviews we had, the early on with our, looking at the book of the year, One Maryland, One Book, which I thought was an amazing book. If you haven't read that, I do encourage you all to read it and wrestle with it and have your students and more look at that and look at more. It was just, I think, one of the best things I've read in a long time. As I think the same with Baynard Wood's article, which I think was an incredible piece that he wrote and well worth the read. And once again, my deep joy at Joy Scott getting them, becoming a Mark Carter Fellow. She's one of the creative giants and lovely human beings in our community who give so much. She's such a well-deserved piece. I'm so happy that she got this. And I want to thank you all for being here today. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our engineer is Andre Milton. Our interns are Morgan Barber and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org, the podcast of Mark Steiner Show, and share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.